We are all God's precious children. Even you, even me. Just like we are. God invites us. God calls to us. God says, let's talk. You are God's precious children. You will each have an invitation on your chair, which reminds us that you are his precious child, that you are invited. He invites us to come away and meet with him, just as we are. He says, let's talk. Will you? Now, I know some of you, if not most of you, already know my story, but if you do, bear with me, because I'm just going to recap some of my story as we kick off this new series today called God Speaks, Learning to Hear His Voice. It's been wonderful to hear testimonies this morning of God speaking to people in different ways, and it's a reminder that God speaks in so many ways, whether it's through that peace which passes all understanding, whether it's through just reminding yourself of something that somebody said, whether it's simply saying, God, I'm overwhelmed, that God speaks in so many different ways. God does not speak like the old National Lottery hand saying, it's you. That's not how God speaks. Maybe he does, but that's not the usual way. I want to take you back to 2011. I was practicing law, working in the employment law department at a national firm in Leeds. I had my training contract lined up to qualify as a solicitor. I was starting September 2012, due to finish March 2014. And I was counting down, because it's what I'd wanted for so long. Since I was about 11, I'd wanted to be a lawyer. I'd wanted to work in law. I'd done law at university. I'd done my legal practice course. I'd worked as a paralegal. And it was all set to go until something stopped feeling quite right in the gut. It didn't sit right. I was getting more and more frustrated. I was getting more and more fed up with clients and the demands that they wanted. And I didn't feel as though my heart was in it anymore. I tried searching for other jobs, but nothing came. I thought, oh, well, let's try something in the church. I know, I'd love to do some youth work. After all, I was in my 20s at the time, and I'd done some youth work in my sending church, but the doors kept closing. No, no, no. Until my vicar at the time suggested ordination, and my jaw hit the ground for a good 20 minutes, and I didn't speak. How did I know it was right? How did I know it was right to pursue that path? Well, there was more than one occasion when I heard God speaking to me. Not in the voice of, it's you, you're going to ordination. But one morning at church during the intercessions, I had a vivid picture of walking down the beach with Jesus. The most idyllic beach I have ever seen. The most crystal clear water I've ever seen. There was only me and him. And it was a sense of Jesus saying, if I've called you, this will work out, Tim. Just trust me. Come along with me. I'm inviting you. And then at Spring Harvest in 2012, the first night we were singing, Lord, for the years, past put behind us, for the future take us, that line. And God said to me, Tim, you're not going back to law. You're going to work for me in my church. I subsequently left, went to work with the Naval Chaplaincy for a year in Plymouth, then went to Theological College. And the rest, and here I am now. But it wasn't a straightforward journey. And that's what I want to get across this morning. It was not a case of these things all ticked into place, and therefore I became a vicar. It wasn't like that. It was messy. It was a messy journey. It was messy leaving law. It was messy telling my mum that I think I'm being called to the church when she'd forked out about 10 grand for me to do the legal practice course. It was messy saying to people in the church, actually, I'm going to be leaving because I'm going there. How are we going to continue the youth work, etc.? It caused upset. I remember one lunchtime on a Saturday, we'd had lunch and I could tell something wasn't right with my mum. And I remember she said, right, we have to talk. And I remember walking through from our kitchen to our living room and just saying, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And we had a really good cry between us. And she said to me, well, if it's right for you, then you've got to do it. But having made that decision to leave over 13 years ago, I can honestly say it's one of the best decisions of my life. And the adventure that I've been on in those last 13 years has been fantastic. There are still challenges along the way. There are still times when I have to stop and say, really, God? Is this really what you want of me? Is this where you want me? Is this what you want me to do? After all, in my journey, when I went to the Naval Chaplaincy, I had to move from Plymouth to Plymouth from Leeds. 5 or 6 hours journey on the train or the car. I had not one member of my family or friends within 200 miles of me. I was 26 at the time. And I thought, what on earth am I doing down here? And that moment when my mum and stepdad drove off, and I thought, well, guess what, mate? You're on your own now. Going back into full-time education at 27. Going into ministry, thinking, where on earth am I going to end up? Yes, God, I want to be above Sheffield. Ha ha, Tim, you're going to Luton. And here we are over 6 years later. Even now, most mornings when I wake up, I have to think, God, am I really called to this? Is this really what you want me to do? Because this is a scary bit of plastic, friends. Let me tell you that. It's only managed through the grace of God. So as we begin this series looking at call and hearing God speak, of course I've started with my journey to ordained ministry. But that is just it. That's my story. It's not your story. We all have our own story of how God has called us into the workplace, into our families, into the church. Each and every single one of you has your own story. And it won't necessarily be to ordained ministry, thank goodness. Because actually, as I've said before, it's you guys that aren't in ministry that are on the front line. You're the ones that are out in the workplace, in the streets, talking about Jesus to your friends and your family. If I'm not careful, I can spend an entire week only talking to Christians. That's not good. That's not what Jesus commanded us to do. That's what the church has become. But each of us have our own story. Each of us have faced challenges. Each of us have had joy. Now, I don't know where you are this morning, friends. Maybe you're sat there thinking, actually, I'm really joyful today because I've got this going on. It's fantastic. Maybe you're sat there thinking, it took all my energy just to get out of bed and get to church this morning. And what am I doing here? I don't know where you are. But you each have a story about why you are here on the 26th of October, 2025, in Christchurch, Bushmead. God speaks to us. God calls us into things. And the idea of this series is not to focus on ordained ministry, but it's to focus on what God is asking of you and what God is asking of me at this time, in this moment. So what does it mean to be called by God? What are we called to? And I guess how, absent a burning bush or divine text message, will we know what it is that God is calling us to? And that's what I hope we're going to explore together over the next few weeks as we spend time looking at this topic. We don't get a burning bush, we don't get a text message, but the answer to those questions, what are we called to? What does it mean to be called by God? It lies in an unlikely place. It starts in a tent. Specifically, the tent of meeting, set up just outside of camp by Moses and the wilderness wandering Israelites. The tent looks perfectly ordinary on the outside, but inside, however, was something staggeringly extraordinary. Because it's in this tent that God would meet with Moses and the congregation. The high, holy God of time, beyond time, space, and anyone's imagination came to their camp. And they weren't meetings where unilateral marching orders were handed out like perhaps it is in the forces. God came to the tent to speak with Moses. to speak with him, not to him. It was a conversation that they had together. It's a conversation that God and Moses had. It's a conversation that me and you can have with God. Now, it may be that God could have worked more efficiently with that disobedient bunch of Israelites by being a dictator. God could do that if he wanted, but he chose not to. Because he called them instead. He met with them instead. And he offered not a divine lecture, but he offers an exchange. He offers a conversation. God sought conversation because conversations are what grow relationships. This was not a meeting of equals, but it was a meeting of intimate friendship. And that call to conversation must be an important strategy for God. Because the meeting tent shows up again in the New Testament. John tells us, the Word became flesh and made his home among us. We will hear that wonderful prologue at Christmas time. When we celebrate the incarnation, we celebrate Jesus becoming flesh and dwelling among us. And in Greek, the word home or dwelling means tent. It is all about the tent, which is a pain because I hate camping. John tells us that Jesus became human to pitch a tent among us, to pitch a tent with us. Jesus comes to be the new meeting tent. There is a divine desire for conversation and relationship with us. So it should not be surprising that one of Jesus' favorite tools in his ministry and in the Gospels is asking a question. He asks all sorts of questions. The Gospels are thick with them. I'm going to give you all a sheet after the service today. And it's two sides. It's quite small. They are all loads of questions that Jesus asks from the Gospels. And I want to encourage you to take this with you. Take it with your invitation. And spend time looking at the questions. How would you answer them? How do you answer them? What is God saying to you through these questions? Maybe write them down. Maybe write the answer down on here. Jesus asks questions because that is what helps us to develop a relationship. He uses them to prod, to cajole, to beckon, to encourage, to teach, and always to call for a further response. The questions reveal the kind of conversation the Lord of heaven and earth calls us to. The kind of conversations that reveal purpose and meaning for us right here in our ordinary lives. The starting point for understanding the call is simple. It's come to the tent, listen for the question, and see how the conversation unfolds. Come to the tent, listen to the question, and see how that conversation unfolds. So rather than asking the question, what am I called to? What are we called to? We start with who calls us. We have to start with God. That is where it all begins. Because God longs for that relationship with us. He longs for the conversation. The Israelites were rising, standing and bowing, and it makes us realize that something profound is occurring in that tent. So how might we in 2025 return to a sense of awe in approaching a conversation with God? Rather than just going, hey, God, I'm here. No. We approach it with awe and reverence. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. We seek the who, not the what. All of us long to know that our lives matter. We all want purpose, hope, and direction. But in addressing these yearnings, Christianity works differently from the rest of society. Because we don't start with the what. We don't start with the how can I get those things. We start with the who can provide those things. Who can provide those things? The Lord Almighty. He is the one that can provide us with purpose, with hope, and with direction. Who is God? It's one question that has a remarkable ability to transform all questions that come after it. No search for meaning makes sense until we go back to that point. Who is God? Indeed, who do you say that I am? Is a question that's asked. We start with God because all things start with God. I don't know about you, but have you ever wondered how the community around us seeks meaning in life? Interesting, David sharing about the self-help book, because I've written that here. Do you see people anxiously leap into self-help books, to career websites, to despair? Do they feel led, lost, or somewhere in between? Firstly, if we're going to talk to them about Jesus, we need to learn where they are at so that we can join them. We need to love them as they are. Then we can prayerfully imagine how we offer that compass question to them. Who do you say that God is? And as the great Selwyn Hughes used to say, who will tell me who's God? And they'd come out with this long answer and go, well, that's not the God I believe in either. Let me tell you about the God that's in the Bible. Because there is that misconception out there of who God is, that he's going to be telling us how to do this. He's a killjoy. That we can't do these things. But God is a God who brings life, who brings hope, who brings direction. That is the God that we want to be sharing to society. Not the God that the media is telling us is who we worship. So in asking that question, who is God? It can help reorientate us and friends and family who don't know him. There is something about tents, because the scriptures talk about tents. For Moses and the Israelites, for Jesus when he comes. The meeting tent was on the outside edge of the camp in Exodus. It seemed to be a tent, as I say, like all the others. We know later, though, that God would provide instructions for the tabernacle, which is a more elaborate tent that provided a portable place of worship until the temple was built. The Hebrew word for tabernacle means dwelling place. Then we get to John. He describes Jesus' divine plan to pitch a tent or a dwelling place amongst us. God comes to live with us. God comes to dwell in tents to show that ordinary tent dwellers, that's me and you, are lovable. He comes to start a conversation. He comes to sort our relationships out. He comes to give us hope, a purpose, and a future. So friends, whether you like camping or not, we are a tent people. And the question for us has to be, where do we pitch our tents so we can have those conversations with our community? It also means, because tents are mobile, we sometimes have to pull up the stakes and go where we're needed to dwell among people in need. It might mean one day you're there and you think, this is fine, I've pitched my camp. And then it may be you have, God says, right, I want you to pull up the stakes and I want you to go over here and meet with this group of people. So you plant your stakes there. It may then be you pick them up again and go somewhere else. And we don't know how long it's going to be in those places. But that's where we have to trust the creator of the universe, who knows us better than we know ourselves and knows us what we need and what we need next. So I want to encourage us, as we look around our community, where can we pitch our tent? It's the logical next step of exploring call. We, the church, called to be the hands and feet of Jesus. We are called to take this very task on. Jesus comes to live and dwell among us. He becomes the new meeting tent. He leads us into the tents where we're supposed to be. And thinking of life in this way should make us switch how we think about success. That it's not about the power or the wealth or the fame. It's about following the call of Jesus. That's a success. When we get to heaven, God's not going to go, oh, well done, you were earning 100 grand a year. He might do. But surely he's going to go, well done, you served me faithfully throughout your life on this earth. You listened to me. You had a relationship with me. I've loved you as my child, and now here you are at last, face to face with me for eternity. What's God going to say when we meet him face to face? After all, our Western mindset is paralyzed by opportunity and decision. We have to make decisions all the time. But how do we know what decision to make? The answer's simple. But how often do we do it? When we have a decision to make, we pray, we ask God, and he will tell us. It's only when I resigned from law that the church said to me, write to him, now we can get to work. We have to fully surrender to God's plans for us, even if we don't like them. So what's stopping us? What barriers are we putting up in our place? And I think the answer is probably that we don't want to be vulnerable. Because questions, being asked questions by the Creator, makes us vulnerable. So are we ready to be vulnerable before the Lord? Because God has a peculiar pattern of asking questions. See if you recognize some of these. Who told you that you were naked? Hagar, why are you crying? Where's your brother Abel? The list goes on. It's peculiar because surely God already knows those answers. But he asks because questions mean a different kind of communication, because they invite a response from the person who is receiving them. They seek an exchange. They seek a relationship. But they also make the asker vulnerable. So when God is asking us those questions, it's making him vulnerable before us. The Lord God Almighty is vulnerable before me and you. We might lash out. We might do a Jonah and run a mile till God turns us round and brings us back. We might ignore God completely. He can handle it, but it's best not to. Or we need to make him wait. Again, he can handle that, but it's best not to. But asking the question invites us either to a new connection, a deeper connection, or to the possibility of rejection. Are we ready for that? God's ready for us. Are we ready for that sort of relationship? Because I actually think God doesn't call us to a task. God calls us into a conversation. And it's through the conversation that we realize what he's asking us to do. What if God calls us not to a destination, but to a living relationship with him in the here and the now? What if God calls us not to an achievement, but to his table, to sit and eat with him? What if we answer, here I am, Lord. We pull up a chair, ready for whatever happens next. Will you answer the call?